Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
I've got in front of me now an interesting book called Hands of an Angel. And when I see a feather in a picture, I always think of angels. Why, I don't know. It must be something to do with my youth. We're now speaking to Helen Parry-Jones. Hello, Helen.
Hello there, Pete. How are you?
Well, why is it every time I see a feather, I think of angels?
Well, it goes back many, many years, in fact. And in fact, even the Aborigines and Red Indians actually associated years and years and years ago to the connection between angels and heaven. And they believe that when one floats down, that it's actually a message from heaven, if you like, or from the angels, or from your spiritual message. But regardless of that, that is just a small sign in which people actually do get messages daily throughout their lives to prove that there is in fact people around us that we can't always see, but somebody like me can see. And this is not a lifestyle choice for me. This is something which I've just had to live with and had to work with. I tried to go along the conventional routes, and I tried to become a dentist at one stage and go into dentistry, a career of that, and had to give it up because the spiritual essence around me was so strong. And over the years I've actually been healing now for well on 30 years now professionally, and people from all sorts of walks of life come to see me, ranging from the very, very top professional people at the height of their careers right down to normal people like you and I.
Helen, at the front of the book, it's called Hands of an Angel. It says an extraordinary life, an exceptional gift, the story of a woman's power to heal. Let's first of all break down who Helen is.
Right.
The very beginning, when did you discover, at what age did you discover what power you had? And also, did it frighten you?
Well, it certainly did. The earliest recollection I have was round about the time when I started school, around about the age of 4. And that's when I could associate to some of the things that was actually going on around me. Before then, it's not that they weren't there, but it's hard to understand things. You know, you're a child. You can't put them into any kind of form of language. But when I was about 4, I started to articulate to my parents that I was seeing dogs, cats. I saw a gentleman in an army uniform that I didn't know who it was. I saw this black man around me all the time. And I kept asking my mum and dad who these people were, particularly, you know, when I used to see cats and dogs running up down the stairs, and my mother would say, there are no cats and dogs in the house. What are you talking about? And then, of course, it turned out that the man in the uniform was my father's father, my grandfather, who died before I was actually born. And so lots and lots and lots of things happened in my early childhood. And I would say things to just, you know, people like our neighbours, Phyllis, our neighbour next door. I just walked into her house one day and said, oh, Phyllis, your hair's going to fall out. And a week later, she had a massive electric shock and she lost all her hair through alopecia. So lots and lots of things used to happen, even from the age of 4. And I gradually started to get this sort of, if you like, around the area, people started to talk about me. Now, I had to grow up with this, but I grew up with parents who really didn't believe, who were extremely skeptical, who kept saying to me, Helen, you're imagining this, you know, this is just a figment of your imagination, you've just got a wild imagination. My mother even dragged me down to the doctors, and I can remember our old doctor, Dr. Cornforth in Chester, because I'm a local girl myself, and I remember her dragging me to the doctor's surgery and him sitting me down and examining me and him saying to my mother, well, actually, your daughter's not delusional, she's not mad, I don't need to send her off for any ECT treatment. She's completely sane, and in fact that possibly what she's seeing is in fact spiritual people.
Helen, how did people treat you as a child, apart from your parents? Were you ridiculed by schoolmates?
I think that there was a little saying that went right throughout my childhood, actually, and particularly from when I was sort of a teenager, and the word Helen will tell you or Helen knows stuck to mind. I remember one of my teachers pulling my mother up aside and saying, you know what, this girl's got an old head on young shoulders. It's almost as though she's been here before. I remember one particular day, you're probably going to laugh at this, but we actually had a domestic science teacher called Mrs. Cook. Can you imagine that her name was actually called Mrs. Cook? And I remember her saying, we're going to cook this today. And she said to me, Helen, why aren't you writing down this recipe? And I said, well, I already have. And she said, well, how can you? I've only just told you that we're going to make this. And I said, oh, it's okay. Sam, my guide, told me yesterday. And so I'd written it down the day before. this is something I've had to grow up
How
with.
How did she react to that?
Well, she was astounded, absolutely staggered, and this is the way it's been right throughout my childhood. Now, the whole reason why this book came about was because originally I'd written a couple of chapters to Random House about my work in the present day. You see, there's an undercurrent of my work. I've never really been in the big public eye, so to speak. You know, it's just word of mouth. It's people passing the message on from word to mouth, and it's the same with the book. So wrote these couple of chapters, and the next minute Random House said exactly the same as you. They said, why or how did it start? And that's what I've written about now. I've written about the start of how it was for me as a child growing up and all the things I can see. Now, can you imagine, Pete, having to grow up with that, having to live with that? Can you imagine what I know now and how it's developed now? So my gift has now developed to such a degree that over the 30 years that I've been practicing, people from all walks of life now, they just literally find me out. I never advertise. It's word of mouth. This book's come out even. I don't even have big media, big media presentation for the book. It is simply word of mouth. And I'm hoping that people's eyes are going to be opened. I'm hoping that people like yourself are going to read this book. And even though there may be areas of it which may seem incredulous to you, because of course you haven't lived the life I've lived, you have to understand that there's parts of it that surely you can relate to. Surely you can see that there are aspects of my life which reflect in yours as well.
I'm talking to Helen Parry-Jones, who's written a book called Hands of an Angel. Can you ever, and as a child, and as you are now, can you switch off? Are you in control, or do they control you and Samuel?
Well, they certainly don't control me, but I have to tell you that right from when I was sort of growing up in the early years, I can tell you I have dropped that many dishes, I've had that many screams, I've had that many shouts, and particularly until in my early 20s, I can honestly say yes, that there was moments when I was absolutely petrified. I mean, I used to call Sam my guide, who is he's about 6'7" tall, he's over 3 meters tall, and he's 2 meters tall, and you know, he's a big black man, and of course in the 60s there were hardly any black people about, so to see a black man was a rare thing. And I kept saying to my mum that he was the bogeyman. I mean, age 4 and 5, seeing somebody like this is quite scary. But of course over the years I've learned to know who Sam is, and I think that my gift, I can honestly say now, it's almost like, you know, when you're in a really busy restaurant and you're with a whole group of people of your own, and you're at the table, you're at the dining table, and you're really engrossed in their company, you don't really notice the other diners in the restaurant, even though you can see them there and you can hear them talking in the background. If you're concentrating on the people that you're with, you don't really hear their conversation. But the minute that you look up from your dinner plate and you sort of tune into the next table or the people that surround you, you can see them, you can start picking up their conversation, and that's what it's like for me with the spirit world. They're around me all the time, but over the years now I've learnt to sort of block it off, for a better word, and only tune in when I need to.
Did Sam find you, or did you find Sam?
He's always been there. As far back as I can remember, he's always been there. The funniest instance for me, when I first was introduced to Sam, my auntie, I used to go and stay with her for weekends. She lived in Connors Quay, and my auntie Joan was absolutely lovely lady, and I used to go and stay with her family because I'm an only daughter, but they had lots of children. So, and her Lou used to be, you know, down the garden. It used to be the privy used to be down the garden, and you used to have to walk a little bit outside just to get to the loo. And as I came out of the toilet and to get to the back door of where my auntie's was, Sam was just sitting there on the back step, and that's when he introduced himself. I would be probably about 4 or 5 at this stage, and he said, look, I don't want you to be scared of me, but I am your guide. I am going to be with you all your life, and although other people can't see me, I am what's called in spirit.
Helen, let me ask you there. Did he say why he was appointed to you, or
yes,
did he pick you?
No, he said that I'd chosen him. Those was his words, and he's always used those words right throughout my life. Now, I don't understand all of this myself, Pete. I mean, even to this day, I question everything there is about my spirituality, about my spiritual gift. But there are some incredible things that's happened over the years. So incredible. And it's not just me saying this. I mean, it's just word of mouth. It's people saying it about me. I don't claim anything, but people have been claiming it about me. And so now I've put the word out out, as it were, on paper. People are now reading the book, and they have to, they're basically reading my story, and they can make of it what they want, but it is the truth. It's what's happened to me.
Helen, where does religion fit into your life?
Well, I mean, people talk about religion. I don't use any religious situation in any form or another to actually practice my gift of spirituality, because at the end of the day, I think religion is a man-made situation, and if you want to belong to the Christian club or the Catholic club or the Buddhist or whatever it is, that's fine. If it's helping you and it's helping to enhance your life and give you focus and positivity, then that's a good thing. But what we all must remember is that all those religions and every single one of us actually, we actually aspire to something much higher than that. There is a higher energy that feeds all those religions, and in fact, each and every one of us. So whether you want to put a label on it or not, I don't put any labels. I don't put any labels on anyone coming to see me, because if you say I belong to this club, then it means you exclude another. So as far as I'm concerned, spirituality is about opening your arms to everyone.
If you feel like that about religion, then where does heaven and hell, if it fits into your life, and the afterlife, where does that fit
in? Well, heaven and hell, I suppose, really, is a little bit like negative and positive energy. You know, at the end of the day, there are good and bad in everything, and it's all about balance. Positive is a positive energy, is a good energy, that's what we want to call it. Negative is not a bad energy, but it's a negative energy. It anchors you, if you like, levels things out. The problem is, and where the problems start, is when things become outbalanced. If you have too much negative, then obviously it causes a dampening effect. It causes a bad effect in your life. If you have too much positive, you're as high as a kite. It's all about trying to get the balance. And I suppose heaven and hell is our way, as a person, of being able to explain ourselves, to being able to explain good and bad situations. Now, Sam has actually explained to me that there are indeed evil people, that there are evil situations. And just like there are bad things happening in our world today, in the spirit world, there are also evil entities, evil situations. But like mixes with like. I mean, you and I are normal people, Pete, so we're not going to go around mixing with thugs or vagabonds. I hope not, anyway. Well, I'm certainly not. You know what I mean? We mix with people who are like us. So if you're a good person and you have good intentions, usually you have good friends and good people around you. If you're mixing in bad circles or you're mixing in evil circles, that will then attract more evil into your life. And it's kind of like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I see it.
So when you die, what do you think happens to you?
Dying is only the step into the next dimension. In fact, we all think that we're on a spiritual journey here on the earth plane, but in actual fact, we're actually spiritual people living an earthly life. In fact, we will be going back to where we originate from. Our soul actually goes back to where we originate from, and that is the highest energy of all. We all transcend to that eventually, and we carry on with our lives there. And the way that the spirit will show themselves to me is in a way that we can identify with. I can't honestly give you all the answers. I don't know all the answers, but what I have seen over the years is that when people, like people's family, show themselves to me, they often show themselves in a way that people can remember them. What's the point in not doing that? Now, they may well have moved on in the spirit world, and maybe they are just an energy, maybe they're just a spiritual energy, but they're able to show themselves in a way that we can remember them, and that's how they communicate. And honestly, some of the communications that they give are absolutely phenomenal. And of course, you know whether I worked on murder cases, and I've helped on things like that in the past as well. And there's lots of things. There's lots of things I've done over the years. And as I say, I don't have to prove it. People speak about me. They speak about my work. But it's just word of mouth. I'm a local girl, and I'm hoping that people are going to support the book. They're going to read it. The only way to buy it is on Amazon. So hopefully you're going to mention that and say that people will support it and read it, have an open mind, and maybe they can have a positive attitude. Because I really do feel that the world is in need right now. I think we need positivity happening around us. For a long time now, Pete, for the past 30 years, the spirit world have been saying to me that there is an urgency for people to change, for people to find themselves, for people to realize that we are more than just walking around this earth doing our daily day-to-day life.
Does it not bother you, Helen, to think that years...
Of course it does.
No, it wasn't the question I was going to ask. I was going to say, does it not bother you to think that many years ago, if you'd have spoken like this, you would have been burnt as a witch?
Well, it's possible, yes. But don't you think that's just, again, the religious situations? I mean, in the sake of Christianity, they went out and burnt thousands of people unnecessarily. Mm. And possibly that, you know, that's a wicked act in itself, isn't it? You know, at the end of the day, maybe there are a lot more people that claim to have spirituality and spiritual gifts. I think there's very few people who have a gift like mine. When my gift first started, which was seeing and hearing the spirit world and seeing the spirit world, that, they told me, was the start to be able to build the foundation up of being able to heal. And it's through that clairvoyance and clairaudience that I've been able to be taught through the angels and through the guides that come to visit me the gift of healing. And they've explained to me how healing works and how I can help other people. Now, all I do is just pass that on. I do the best I can with what I have and how I'm able to do it. I don't have the vocabulary to explain everything, because how can you put it all into words? But what I do is I work at it. I don't just talk about healing. There are many people out there who've written books or claimed this or claimed that. I work every day with ordinary people and professional people, and they themselves see the difference. They themselves meet me, they listen to me, or they have a session with me, or they have healing with me, and it's their lives that's changed. And so before I pass this earth, I'm getting older myself, Pete, I'm afraid, you know, I thought it's time to put it on paper. I've been asked for many years to do some writing, and I've been too busy working to be able to put pen to paper, and I thought, well, right, now the time is right.
I'm talking to Helen Parry-Jones. The book is called Hands of an Angel. I've got to ask you about the healing. Yes. I want to go into depth with more about this. Now, you say that you have the power to heal.
No, I don't claim anything.
Right?
I don't claim to have any power as such, but what I have found is that somehow, when I start to work on somebody, healing energy seems to transfer through me to that person. I can see people's illness. I feel people's illness. And, of course, they've done a couple of documentaries on my work. I don't know if you're aware of that. And during those documentaries, there was even a doctor who went on and actually said on camera, he said, it is almost as though Helen has the medical notes here of my patient, because she's saying it word for word as it's written in my documents.
Helen, tell me right now, as we sit here,
yes,
you're at another end of a phone, I'm at this end, what is around you now? What is where you are now in the room you're in now?
Well, I'm sitting at home. Yeah. I'm sitting at home at the moment. My guide, Sam, is always popping in and out.
Is he around now?
He's around now. He's not the sort of person that ever dictates to me. What usually happens in life now is, if I have a situation that needs talking about, just like you would with your family or a member, you know, somebody that you have some details with your business, you know, you'll discuss things. He never says to me, you must do this, you must do that. But we do argue points out. I mean, I'm always saying, well, I'm not sure about this, because at the end of the day, we all have the freedom to be able to make our own mind up about things. We have freedom of choice. But what Sam will do is he will give me his side of things. He will give me his spiritual, if you like, his spiritual picture, and then he'll ask me to reflect on that and decide what I think is best for me.
Have other guides tried to take you over?
No, never.
They've never tried to encroach on Sam's...
Okay, you say, will other guides try to take you over?
Yeah, I mean, move Sam out the way and want you for themselves.
No, but what he has done is he has introduced me to several different people through the healing professions who have come and visited, if you like. Mm-hmm. There was a chappie called Harry Edwards over the years who's been and worked through me. Now, he used to be quite a famous healer, I believe, before my time, certainly, but I think he died in the 80s, in fact, and I didn't know him. I never met him personally.
Helen, when you've been involved with murder cases,
yes,
aren't you crossing into a really deep, deep world of evilness?
Well, what happened in that particular case, this is not something I caught. I must just point out to you that on the murder cases I've worked on, I've been invited to work on. I haven't actually gone out and courted this. this is where the police have actually come to me, or a member of the family that's lost somebody have come to me and asked me to work on this case. This is not the norm for me, and it's not something I enjoy doing. I don't relish it, and I do really don't like it. But you know, in situations like this, how can you say no not to help someone, especially if there's been a contact? In one particular case, I did a seminar actually in Shrewsbury some years ago, and a lady bought a ticket to come and see me, very innocent. I went away on holiday, and a month later, her family contacted me, and apparently she'd said to her friend at that evening, I don't know why, but I'm going to be speaking to that girl. I don't know why, but I'm going to have something to do with her. I came back after a month's holiday, and when I came back, she'd been murdered. Now, the family contacted me, and I worked on that case, and from that, calibrated, I think that's the word, a crime watch from that. But unfortunately, it was circumstantial evidence, and we were never able to actually, at that time, get the DNA evidence to be able to convict the person concerned. But these are not something that I really enjoy doing. It's not something I do on a regular basis. It's only when I'm invited.
Helen, what do you want people to take from Hands of an Angel?
What I would like people to take from Hands of an Angel, and the whole reason why I've written it, is because this is a time of change now. We all need to start looking within ourselves, really, and finding who we are so that we can radiate this positive energy out. By being positive about yourself radiates a positivity towards other people and other situations. Now, there are a lot of good people in this world, don't get me wrong. There's some lovely people doing some great work, and I know they are. But there's also a lot of negativity. There's a lot of people who are taking everything for granted. They're taking people for granted, taking situations for granted. It's all take and no give. And it's time now that we really do have to start looking at ourselves, looking at our futures, looking at the world we live in, and starting to reflect and realize that we can't just take it for granted. And the spirit world are trying to get this through to us. They're trying to get this message through to us very, very profoundly.
If you have so much power, even though you don't promise people,
yes.
Do you not think that your life's work should be just spent going around hospitals?
Well, I do a lot of that. And in fact, you know, I don't publicise the fact of the private work that I do. It isn't just a matter of just seeing people at, you know, at clinics or on seminars. There's a lot of work that I do behind the scenes that people don't know about. But then people who do charitable work quite often don't. They don't advertise that fact, do they? And I certainly haven't. You know, at the end of the day, I just go about doing what I do. I'm a small one person, but it's time for that. It's time for people to know about it, and I would love so much more now. I feel the word has to be got out on a larger scale.
I've got to ask you a question I've never, ever, ever, ever asked before, ever.
Go on.
Which is quite interesting, I think. I've worked with many psychics, many people who write ghost stories, many people who look at the paranormal, many people that believe in afterlife, many people that believe in aliens. And I've never asked this before, and I don't know why this has just come to me, but I shall. This lady, her name is Helen Parry-Jones. The book is called Hands of an Angel. We'll tell you exactly in a moment how to buy it. What do you actually get? And be incredibly honest, as you appear to be. What do you get from me?
From you?
Yeah, we've spoken now for half an hour. I know, we've never met.
Okay. Well, we're just talking on the telephone, of course.
But what do you think, I mean?
What I think
as a person, and what does anything come across? I'm not trying to get a reading. I'm just trying to see what you think of me, and whether I'm...
Well, really, my personal feelings about you really don't come into this interview at this moment. And if I was to actually speak with you, I feel that you're an incredibly private person when it actually comes to your personal life. And so, therefore, as a person and as a professional person, I certainly wouldn't talk about your private life here on the radio. I mean, we could talk about things in general and work and stuff like this, if that's what you wish to
do. Sorry, it wasn't that. I'm pretty sure what you're saying. No, what I'm trying to say is, do you feel that I am at all spiritual? Do you feel anything?
Absolutely.
That's what I mean.
Because everybody's spiritual to some degree. I think the problem is that we put our barriers up. If you're told that tea's bad for you, you're never going to drink it, are you? Maybe your whole barrier towards spiritual things is because maybe you just haven't seen or heard the right thing. I mean, possibly, I don't think you're as closed as you think you are. If you were so closed, you wouldn't even be having this conversation with me. So therefore, you are an open person. You are a warm person. You are articulate and communicator like most people. And people who do communicate in any form whatsoever are people who are passing messages on. So you have an incredibly important job. And you may not be working in the same way that I am or even in the same field. But in actual fact, you are helping people, regardless if you may be realizing that you're doing that. So in a way, we all have our own gifts in our own way, passing that ability to heal and help others. And your gift is that you're doing it through your radio program. But if I was sitting with you, you know, if we were in private or I was sitting with you in general, then I think there's a great deal of work that you do. You have an incredibly huge heart towards other people. And I certainly feel that from a charitable point of view, there's nothing better that you like than a good old kind of feisty fight with people to get things going. You're a great person that believes if there is something really true, I believe that you'll stand on your hobby horse and actually say it, which not many people, of course, will do. Not many people will stand up and actually try and change something. And it's hard for people that do that. I mean, I'm like that to some degree. I'm at the pinnacle. I'm at the point, if you like, where I am changing things. I'm hoping I'm changing people's views and people's way that they think towards spirituality. That's all I hope to do. I just hope that it will lead them with an open mind and a thought.
Last question.
Yes.
What is your opinion on Ouija boards?
Absolutely, they should be burnt, without a doubt. What you must understand is that there are good and bad situations in everything. And when people use Ouija boards, they may see it as an absolutely harmless prank. But in actual fact, you are opening your doors. It's like opening your front door and shouting out to everybody on the street, come on in and just come in. Me. If you did that, you'd never be safe, would you? You do not know who's going through. It is a spiritual doorway. It is a spiritual way of communicating and do work, believe me. And there are many people out there that have had witnesses of that. But you don't know whether it's a good energy or a bad energy. And so my advice to everybody that's going to anything to do with that is leave it well alone.
How do they buy the book?
Well, you can go on amazon.co.uk. You can also follow me on Twitter. I tweet these days. I'm not very good at it, but I do the occasional tweet. I also have a Facebook page, Helen Parry Jones, and you can join my Facebook page and see what's going on. I also have helenparryjones.com, which is my website, and that tells you of all the upcoming events that I'm doing, whether I'm doing book signings, whether I'm doing seminars, private appointments, whatever's coming up, it should be there. And people can write to me. I'm not this face that people just hear. There's many out there that are just giving lectures or talking about books or talking about spirituality. You can actually come and meet me. You can talk to me. And I do actually work as a clinical therapist working amongst the people.
The book is called Hands of an Angel. And this lady who's been talking to me now, his name, Helen Parry Jones. Helen, thank you so much.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And the thing is, are you going to read it, sweetie?
I am dyslexic. I have a lot of problems reading.
Oh, come on with you.
No, I'm being serious. I haven't even read I've written my own book and I haven't even read it back. I've just admitted something I've never admitted on my programme. I've never even read my own book.
Well, you know,
back.
There's a secret to that. Then get somebody else to read it to you.
That would be glorious
on
holiday.
Well, I hope to meet you in person one day. Thank you so much for allowing me to have a chat.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.